We've been in a series called Becoming Like Jesus. So if you've been here for a while, you probably heard us say this a number of times, but I'll say it again just for good measure. We believe that we become like Jesus by doing the things that Jesus did. And the record of Jesus' daily life through the Gospels is crystal clear. Jesus spent time doing spiritual practices, practices like praying, practices like reading the Bible, practices like the Sabbath, practices like following the Spirit. These are all things that Jesus engaged in. And if we engage in these spiritual practices, we can change. To bring our series to a close today, we're going to be talking about the practice of noticing and nurturing beauty. So if you're scratching your head and wondering why we're talking about beauty, you're in good company. You're probably born before 1981. You might be a millennial, or you might be a Gen Xer, or a baby boomer, these labels that we use to describe different generations. You know, in 1991, a book called Generations was published. The book described how America, in particular, has articulated its spiritual hunger for God through a series of questions tied to specific generations. Since the birth of this country, it turns out that this country has only been asking really four questions. And these four questions repeat every four generations. If you're a baby boomer, you were born sometime between 1946 and 1964, you're asking the question, what is true? You grew up in a time when objective truth was something to be sought after. And quoting from an article, one found, this objective truth would alter your life's perspectives and priorities. To that end, Spiritual Conversations for You sought to prove that Christianity was based on facts and truth. Well, if you're a Gen Xer, born sometime between 1965 and 1980, that's me, by the way, you're asking the question, what is real? And you saw the truth-seeking of the boomers and wondered, what's authentic, though? What's authentic? You fell out of love with the church and with Christianity because of hypocrisy. You examined yourselves for what was real and authentic, and you stared into the abyss of your souls to the soundtrack of grunge and 90s hip-hop. If you're a millennial, you're asking the question, what is good? You react to the seeming navel-gazing of Gen Xers and want to know if the Christian faith can help solve the problems of this world, like global poverty or human trafficking or terrorism. You want to do good and you want to be good. But what about the next generation? What about so-called Gen Z, born after 1981? Well, if history tells us anything, you'll be asking the same question that every fourth generation has been asking since the birth of our country. You'll be asking the question, what is beautiful? In other words, what is worthy to be worshipped? And directly related to that, what is just? I know these questions seem like gross generalizations, but just in my personal experience, after talking to a handful of these so-called Gen Zers, almost to a person, they respond with hunger toward the question of beauty. You might actually be feeling that right now. You know, in my own journey, at a retreat in upstate New York, I discovered that beauty would be a critical part of my life's work. When we were constructing goals for our spiritual rhythms at this retreat, I didn't even realize this, but beauty snuck its way into almost everything I wrote. And I had not really been reading about it or really thinking about it much. So I began to read about beauty. I listened to talks on beauty. I started to talk about beauty and God's beauty to others. I made sure I kept reading things that fed my imagination for beauty. I kept reading fiction. I started to read some poetry. I started to visit museums to keep triggering my wonder and imagination. And we began to do this intermittent practice, which we'll do a little bit later today, with my children, asking, what have you seen, heard, or otherwise experienced this week that was beautiful? That's become a regular part of our family liturgy. And here's the thing. Every time I mention beauty, even mentioning it without fully formed thought about it, I noticed that people would stop and listen. Young people especially. I would be talking about it in one conversation, and people would leave their conversations to listen. And guys, I was not doing this in a compelling way. I was just talking about beauty, talking about it. And talking about beauty, even in a non-compelling way, somehow there was some electricity about it. And I believe that the electricity was because I believe that the Spirit is doing something in this generation, Gen Z. Listen, I'm convinced that if we as a church are to become Jesus to our city, we need to pay attention to and be captivated by beauty. We need this practice of noticing and nurturing beauty if we hope to be the kind of people that are the, quote, aroma of Christ to those who do not know him, especially young people. If we are able to tune ourselves to beauty, especially the beauty of God, we might just win this next generation for Jesus. So we're at the point now where we probably need to define beauty. What is beauty? And I'm going to just ask you to stay with me. Just stay with me. I promise, even though this might seem a little heady, I just promise that we're going to be talking a lot about beauty. So if you're thinking, I need more time to hear this good news, this is just the beginning. Okay, but please, please, please stick with me, all right? So what is beauty? In some ways, beauty is hard to define. You know it when you see it. Thomas Aquinas called beauty what pleases the sight. And incidentally, this definition gave pause to the Protestant reformers because they were worried that beauty was simply a trait of appearance. And if it was a trait of appearance, then it would be subjective, left to the beholder. And so beauty faded from our common language as Christians. But it's coming back. It is coming back. Historically, the single most enduringly recognized attribute of beauty is symmetry. Symmetry. The great North African bishop, St. Augustine, held the conviction that this kind of symmetry, or what he called actually equality, is at the heart of beauty. Harmony. Perfect harmony is beautiful in a person. And for Augustine, there could be no other source of beauty than God. And only God is there perfect symmetry, perfect equality between who he is, his character, and what he does, his actions. Perfect symmetry, perfect equality between who God is and who and what he does. No other being is like that. He is beautiful, the most beautiful being in the universe, and he is glorious. In the 20th century, the great theologian Hans Urs von Balthasar wrote a 7-volume opus on beauty. And one of the things that he said that all theology, all study about who God is, must start with beauty. He said that beauty is primal, it's first, because beauty is glory. Beauty is splendor. Beauty is God's majesty. As King David wrote in the Psalms, "Praise the Lord, my soul. Lord, my God, you are very great. You are clothed with splendor and majesty." You will find over and over again, if you look at it carefully, that the Bible talks quite a bit about this kind of glory. Glory in the perfection of God's character, who he is, and glory in the perfection of his deeds and actions. You'll find over and over and over again, if you look carefully at the Bible, at how God is described, you will see that there is this perfect symmetry between who God is and what he does. He is good, and all that he does is good. He is kind, and all that he does is kind. He is love, and all that he does is loving. As for character and who God is, here's just a sampling of what the Bible has to say. Moses, in Exodus chapter 33, says, "Please show me your glory." And God said, "I will make all my goodness pass before you and proclaim before you my name, the Lord." It's his character, his goodness, who he is that passes in front of Moses. In Isaiah chapter 6, verse 3, holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory. Deuteronomy 5, 24, behold, the Lord our God has shown us his glory and his greatness. You know, you could substitute beauty for glory in almost every single place that occurs in the Bible, and it will make a lot of sense, especially to a Gen Zer. Just take this last verse from Deuteronomy that I read. Behold, the Lord our God has shown us his beauty, his glory, his beauty, and his greatness. And as I said before, beauty is symmetry, perfect equality between who he is, his character, which we just talked about, and what he does. As for his actions, Chronicles, 1 Chronicles chapter 16, declare his glory or his beauty among the nations, his marvelous deeds among all peoples. His marvelous deeds are the reason and cause for glory. It's essential to his beauty. The heavens, Psalm 19:1 tells us, declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. The work of his hands are the glory, the beauty of God. The work of his hands. And the heavens declare it. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. How many of you have ever experienced that? How many of you have ever sat on the shore of Lake Michigan and felt wonder and awe at the beauty in creation of God and his works? Anybody ever experienced that before? It's actually really captivating and powerful. But as for all of God's marvelous works, sending Jesus is at the top of the list. Hebrews 1 tells us, in the past, God spoke to our ancestors through the prophets at many times and in various ways, but in these last days, he has spoken to us by his Son, whom he appointed heir of all things, and through whom also he made the universe. All right, listen, this verse is very important. Listen, the Son, Jesus, is the radiance of God's glory and the exact representation of his being, sustaining all things by his powerful word. After he had provided purification for sins, he sat down at the right hand of the majesty in heaven. So he became as much superior to the angels as the name he has inherited is superior to theirs. I'm going to read that verse again. I'm going to read the verse that I wanted to highlight. Verse 3, the Son is the radiance of God's glory, God's beauty, and the exact representation of his being, sustaining all things by his powerful word. Jesus is the radiance of God's glory, the exact representation of his being. Jesus, in other words, is the exact representation of God's character and his actions in the world. In other words, Jesus is beauty embodied. It's this Jesus that naturally and irresistibly invites us to ponder beauty, because everything beautiful is a reflection of his beauty. Let's just take a moment and think about that for a moment. Let's just take a moment and think about Jesus. What's beautiful about Jesus to you? Just take a moment. What is beautiful about Jesus to you? I mean, and if you've got the chat open, maybe even just put that in the chat. Jesus, you are beautiful because, and you fill in the blank. Jesus, you are beautiful because you are kind. Jesus, you are beautiful. Just take a moment. Put it in the chat. Couldn't we use a spiritual practice like this right now? I mean, it's been a pretty tough year, hasn't it? Now we're in this predicted second wave of COVID. It's pretty hard not to be discouraged about life right now, which is why we need constant reminders of beauty. We need the kind of hope that beauty brings us. I mean, just take a moment and think about that exercise. Jesus is beautiful because. How many of you felt some hope when you did that exercise? How many of you felt your hearts lift? I mean, that's what beauty does. I mean, even beyond Jesus, how many of you have cried at the end of a book because it was so beautiful? I remember reading the last quarter of Thomas Merton's Seven Story Mountain with tears in my eyes. I mean, the pages were almost luminous. They were almost full of light. Or maybe you've watched a movie and it's done that for you. Or maybe you have taken in, as I was talking before, like a sunset or a sunrise, and it moved you and it gave you hope. Beauty reminds us that the toughest and most difficult experiences of life are not the end. Beauty reminds us that there is still hope. A few weeks ago, Adama, one of our leaders, talked in a message about how impacted he was by the beauty of Jesus. How looking at Jesus through the reading of the book of Luke gave him joy. And ultimately, Adama would turn his life over to this beautiful Jesus. I was talking to another young man who said something very similar. Having grown up in the church, this man went to college and started to experience some anxiety. And what helped him most was beauty. Was reading the Bible and encountering the beauty of Jesus in it. Beauty and the noticing and nurturing of it can literally save us. My friend and pastor, Jared Boyd, likes to use these two directives, notice and nurture the work of God in the world. So following my friend Jared, my invitation to you is to do two things. We would like to invite you, as you become like Jesus, to do this practice of noticing and nurturing beauty. I mean, when you notice beauty, you are really noticing the fingerprints of Jesus in this world. And so again, open up your chat, and let's take a moment right now and reflect. What did we notice, experience, see, or hear that was beautiful this week? Could you put that in the chat? What did you notice, experience, see, or hear that was beautiful this week? Take a moment. Just write it in the chat. What did you notice, experience, see, or hear that was beautiful this week? Friends, I just want you to know that I want to invite you this week to do this exercise every day. And as you do this exercise, I want to invite you to breathe the prayer, "All glory to you, beautiful Jesus." Whatever it is that you notice, that you see, that you hear, that you experience that is beautiful this week, do this every day. And as you do it, pray this simple prayer, "All glory to you, beautiful Jesus." This is how we begin to notice beauty. But secondly, it's not just notice, it's also nurture beauty. Put your attention on the person of Jesus through contemplation. This is one way that you can nurture beauty. As the Apostle Paul tells us, "And we all who with unveiled faces contemplate the Lord's glory, beauty, are being transformed into his image with ever-increasing glory, which comes from the Lord who is the Spirit." Now I'm going to read that verse again, substituting glory with beauty. "And we all who with unveiled faces contemplate the Lord's beauty are being transformed into his image with ever-increasing beauty, which comes from the Lord who is the Spirit." This is astounding. As we nurture beauty, as we contemplate the beauty of the Lord, we become transformed into the beautiful Jesus, which is what's the whole point of this series. This whole series has been about becoming like Jesus. What if the becoming starts with this practice? Nurturing beauty by contemplating on the beauty of Jesus. What does contemplate mean? It doesn't mean just to think about. It means to think about with wonder, awe, and reverence. If you think about beholding something beautiful, there is something about that that resists like inspection or clinical inspection. When you behold something beautiful, it's natural for us to stop for a moment and to say, "Ah." That's the kind of contemplation I'm talking about. Nurture the awe of wonder as you think about Jesus. So this week, This week, nurture beauty by adding to your noticing exercise, thinking with wonder about Jesus. We did that a little bit earlier in this message. You can describe him every day. Jesus, you are beautiful because, and you fill in the blank. You can make it art if you like. You can make it an artifact, like writing a short poem or a song, or even in your work. You can nurture beauty by doing something just in imitation of the beautiful Jesus you're thinking about. Nurture beauty in the way that you respond to others as Jesus might respond. Be kind to someone you feel doesn't deserve it, and thus reflect the beauty of Jesus. Love your enemies. Pray for those who have insulted you. Beauty comes in many different forms as we nurture beauty, and our nurturing of it can bring about surprising kingdom outcomes. Speaking of surprising kingdom outcomes and how beauty can actually change us and transform us, in 2019, an artist in the Twin Cities brought two congregations together, an English and a Spanish-speaking one, to make art. She was exploring how art can draw people together across linguistic divides when people don't understand each other's languages. She writes, "I saw firsthand how art can tell untold stories." And as they made art together during the Lent season, that season that precedes Easter, she watched how these two congregations built connections and how these two congregations were made to be face-to-face with each other. Their commitment to beauty began to trigger transformation and reconciliation. Beauty was literally beginning to tear down the racial divide. Notice and nurture beauty, which can bring about transformation and surprising kingdom outcomes. That's our invitation for this week. And so we end our series on spiritual practices. Over the last 9 weeks, we spent time talking about different spiritual practices in our formation as we seek to become like Jesus. We believe that each one of these practices helps us to become like Jesus because these practices are the things that Jesus did. So where do we go from here? After this week, after we practice noticing and nurturing beauty, what do we do now? Well, I'm glad you asked that question. Next week, we begin a new series focused on the person of Jesus through the book of Luke. We'll spend our Christmas season, Advent, in Luke. We'll spend the first months of the year in Luke leading up to Easter. We will all be reading Luke together in our small groups. And so what's the next thing? Well, maybe the next thing is this. Over the next few months, join us in this series as we ponder and contemplate the person of Jesus, the beauty of Jesus. One way that we can nurture beauty over an extended period of time is giving ourselves to contemplating him through the eyes of the good doctor, Luke.